Okay, so we are going to look at the beginning of this week's Sedra, which is Chaye Sara. Chaye Sara. Here we are. And the very beginning of the Sedra goes. One second. Vayiyu Chaye Sara. And the life of Sarah, that's the wife of Abraham, the life of Sarah was Me'a Shana, 100 years, the Esrim Shana, and 20 years, the Sheva Shanim, and 7 years, Shnei Chaye Sarah, that is the years of the life of Sarah. Now you notice that this English translation, which is on this website, Sepharia, puts it much more simply, but the fact that the Hebrew expresses it in this way is the subject of different kinds of commentary. There's a comment on it by Rashi that we're not going to explore at this moment, and there's a comment on it in more mystical literature, which the discourse is going to discuss. So this statement about Sarah, and the point is that Sarah died. She died in Hebron, and she was buried there by Abraham in what we call the Me'orat HaMachpelah, the cave where the patriarchs are buried. And this Torah portion presents the steps whereby he acquired this cave. He bought this cave as a place to bury her, and that's where he buried her. So now we are ready to begin looking at the discourse. And the thing about the discourse is it was said in 1964, which is similar to other discourses we've been studying recently the last few weeks. They've been from 1964. And so first of all, we will try and have the melody of the discourse, if we can find it. Right. I trust everyone was able to hear that. And we're now looking at the discourse, and I'm saying hello to Eve and to Deborah, who presumably is Paige's friend. Nice to see you here. Okay. So let's look at this. So here we have this discourse said in 1964 on this Shabbat of Parshat Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah, and like this coming Shabbat, it is the day when the new moon of Kislev was being blessed. Vayiyu chaye Sara mea shana ve'esrim shana. The life of Sarah was 100 years and 20 years. V'sheva shanim and 7 years. Shnei chaye Sara. These are the years of the life of Sarah. V'ita v'zohar. And it says in the Zohar. Now the Zohar is the central text of the Kabbalah. Written by Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who was a sage shortly after the time of the Second Temple, so therefore in the second century of the current era. So it says in the Zohar, Inun Chayin Kulhu Le'ela, these life, the life that's being described here, all of them are above. And that's Me'er Shana, 100 years, Le'ela, above. Ve'esrim Shana, and 20 years, above. Ve'sheva Shanim, and the 7 years, Le'ela, above. So that's what the Zohar says. Now, you should know that the Rebbe's father wrote a fascinating commentary on the Zohar. He had been sent into exile in a remote part of eastern Russia near the Chinese border. And there you could not buy paper or pens or ink. So he had just a few books with him, and one of them was a Zohar. And his wife managed to make ink for him out of berries and pens out of reeds. And he wrote on the margins of the Zohar and of the other books he had there. And so on the margins of the Zohar, he wrote a commentary on the Zohar, which is fascinating and which has been published, which often focuses on a word. You know, what does this word mean? And that's the style of the Rebbe's approach here. But Sarich Lahavin, we have to understand, what does it mean in the Zohar that the life of Sarah heim le'ela is above? What does that mean? It's above. Begam tzarich lahavin. We also have to understand mashakatub b'sima pasuk. What it says at the end of the verse, it repeats this phrase shnei chayi Sarah, the years of the life of Sarah. Dilechora ma mosif kan. At first sight, what is being added to that which it said before? It said before at the beginning of the verse, the life of Sarah was, and then it gives 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. And then it says again, the years of the life of Sarah. So what does that mean? Especially considering what it says in the Zohar. Shagam chaye Sarah heim la'ela. The life of Sarah is above. Ve'im kein ma mosif al zeh b'mashe katuv shnei chaye Sarah. So, what exactly does this verse mean with all these different questions around it? So, what the Rebbe is going to do in this very intriguing discourse, he's going to take two passages by the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Rebbe Rashab, Rabbi Sholem Dov Ber, who was the Rebbe until 1920. He became Rebbe something like 1882 when his father passed away. And a very remarkable figure. And he wrote many, many books. And so what the Rebbe is going to do is take two passages in the Rebbe Rashab's writings. I think it's one from the year 1914. The books are generally collected according to year, the books of the Rebbe Rashab. So you can talk about the writings or the teachings of a particular year, like there's 1906, 1910, and so on. Sometimes it's not only that year, it spreads into other years as well. But so here the Rebbe is going to compare two teachings by the Rebbe Rashab, which relate to this issue that we're talking about. And one is from the year 1914 and one is from the year 1918. And somehow by putting those two teachings together, we will understand really the focus here is on the unique nature of Sara. And Sara has the power to bring a kind of spiritual radiance into the world. And in order to do that, and that connects also with her husband, Abraham, that together with her husband, Abraham, they are bringing this radiance down into the world. But in order to do that, Sarah has to sort of reach upwards to a more exalted level and draw down this radiance so that then it can flow into the world. So it's as if Sarah, the wife of Abraham, she has some crucial spiritual role according to these Kabbalistic Hasidic texts. But that could be interpreted as relating to each one of us, how we also have, in a tiny way, but mirroring that process of reaching upwards to a very exalted level of the divine, and then communicating downwards and drawing that radiance downwards. So let's see how the Rebbe explained this. V'hine inyan zenit ba'ayin. Now this idea has been explained v'shnei ma'amarei kvot kdushas admo ma'arashav in two discourses by the Rebbe Rashab. Dibua matchil v'ayu chai sarav. One of them begins with the words, the life of Sarah was, it begins with the first word of this verse. In fact, both discourses begin in the same way. And one is from Shnat He Etel, which means 1914. And the other one is Shnat Ateret, which means 1918. And at a certain point, they seem to contradict each other, these two discourses, and we're going to sort of unravel that. Now, so let's see. First of all, we're looking at the discourse of 1914. In that discourse, it explains that when it says Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah, Hu Achayut, that's the life force, the energy, Shel Bechinat Malchut Da Atzilut, of kingship of Atzilut. Now, we understand, hopefully, that there are four worlds of the Kabbalah. In English, they are emanation, that's the highest, and then going downwards, creation, formation, and action. And action is the lowest of the four worlds. And it's in the world of action that our physical universe is to be found, or it's receiving energy directly from the world of action, from the lowest level. But if we go to the highest level, which is emanation, now emanation in Hebrew is atzilut, and in each of these worlds there are 10 sefirot. So I think maybe we should try just to look at those sefirot, because we're going to be talking a lot about them in this course. One second, let me try to find them so that we can talk about them together. So there is the Sfirot, a diagram of the Sfirot, which I just want to try to share with you. It's the same, you might well have seen this several times before. It's this diagram that I often use. So we have at the top the infinite Ein Sof. And then we have coming down, we have the sort of intellectual attributes, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. And then the emotional attributes like kindness and severity and mercy, victory, submission, dedication. And then there's kingship, which is fulfillment and is also the feminine. So this is the Svira, this 10th Svira, this 10th emanation is what is called Malchut, kingship. And so within each of those four worlds, you can imagine this diagram. This diagram is there, so to speak, in each of the four worlds. So each of the four worlds has its own set of 10 Sfirot. And there's a sort of a flow going all the way through the Sfirot and from one level of world to another. So I think that that equips us to go back to the discourse and examine it further. Now only to find that I've lost it, so I'm going to have to find it again somehow. Well, meanwhile, while I'm looking for the discourse, does anyone have any comments or question at this point? Nope. Okay. All right. So I've found it. So now we will get back into it. Right. Okay. So the Rebbe explains that there are these two discourses, and what it says in the one of 1914, Shechayei Sarah, the life of Sarah, is the chayut, the life force of Malchut of Atzilut. In other words, the 10th Sfira in the world of emanation. Shechayuta, because the energy coming from that level. Hu mibchinat mea shana, that's what it means, 100 years. And that 100 years relates to Keter, which is the first Sfira. It didn't actually say Keter in the diagram, but it said crown, the will. That's the upper level, the top of the diagram. Then Eschim Shana, 20 years, that means wisdom and understanding, moving down the diagram. And then Sheva Shanim, 7 years, that is the pattern of seven Sfirot. Which come down, what I call the emotional sphere. And that attribute, Malchut, that 10th sphere, the end of the diagram, that is, he mekabelet mibchinat mea shana le'ela. It receives from 100 years above. And what does it mean above? That it's all ha'atzmi, it's light of the essence. And the 20 years also means 20 years of the essence. Because when we're talking about this flow of radiance, in each flow, it's not only at the level of that part of the diagram, so to speak, it's also drawing from the essence. And Shazohi Kavanat HaZohar, that's what the Zohar means, B'tevat Le'ela B'chol Klal. The idea that there is, it says Le'ela, it says above, with each of these numbers, 100 years, and the Zohar says 100 years above, 20 years, and the Zohar says 20 years above. So that is because the flow that is coming is something which is impregnated with a flow from the essence beyond. We're going to look back at the diagram in a moment just to try and consolidate what we're reading. Ach kol zeh hi bechinat hamalchut, all this is kingship, kamo shehi ba'olam atzilut, the way it is in the highest world of emanation. V'achakach, and after that, ne'ma shnei chayei Sarah, then it says the years of the life of Sarah, which means from Malchut, it flows down, Hamshachat Ha'or, the flow of light, Bo'olamot Bria Yitzira Asiya, down into the lower worlds. So let's try and see if we can look at this in terms of the diagram again and try and see if we can understand it. So it's a bit of a problem that I have to keep exiting one place and sort of losing it, then I have to find it again. But let's try. So here we have this sphere with Hebrew, as it's described, right? So we are looking at that. There. So here we have the Sefirot. So that highest level is crown, which in Hebrew is Keter. So it only says Ratzon, it says will here, but it should also say Keter in Hebrew, but it doesn't. So this highest level is crown, and that's the 100 years. Then we have the 20 years. So wisdom and understanding, they make the 20 years. And then we have the 7 years. Well, there's kindness, severity, mercy, victory, submission, dedication, that's 6. And then we have the feminine, which is 7. So that's the 7, which are the 7 years. Now, all that is flowing now. So here it's a little bit paradoxical because kingship is part of the 7. And nonetheless, we're talking about it all flowing into kingship. And then this, it's as if this diagram is a diagram of the world of Atzilut, the world of emanation. But then further below are the worlds below. And so it flows down from kingship, from the feminine. It flows down into the lower worlds. It's as if the feminine receives from these masculine, so to speak, attributes. Incidentally, the concept, according to Hasidic teachings, the very fact that humanity and the animal world and the plant world can be divided into male and female is because of these distinctions that there are on this supernal level in these divine attributes. So when we talk about these upper attributes flowing down into they are like the male flowing into the feminine. However, what happens with the male flowing into the feminine? The feminine gives birth. And with the help of God. And that giving of birth is like a new process flowing down from her to a further world or further worlds below. So that's what's happening here. The flow which comes from above into kingship then is sent further on its way by a flow from kingship downwards. So if we see this diagram as representing the world of emanation, we could then imagine 3 more diagrams similar, which represent the next worlds down, creation, formation, and action, which means there's a flow coming all the way into our physical world, which we inhabit. So that is what the discourse of 1914 explained. Now I'd like to stop at this point and ask if everyone is okay, if everyone understands this.
I'm a bit new to the Sefirot, so what do we mean by the flow exactly?
Flow?
Yes.
Well, if you talk about the, it's a very reasonable question. Let's imagine the mind of a person has a thought in his or her mind. And you're thinking about this thought. And then you decide you're going to speak about it. You're going to tell someone what you've been thinking. Now that can be understood as a flow from the mind to speech, from thought into speech. So in the Sefirot, now you can divide up this process. What made the person think this thought? And there might be a whole lot of connections, responses, something she saw, which made her remember this or that. It's a whole lot of different things that can go into what makes this thought. And then the thought emerging as speech. So that can be understood as an example of flow within ourselves. And so there's a kind of the root of such psychological processes, human processes within ourselves, the root of that is in the world of the spherot. And it's as if there's an energy which is flowing from one sphere to the other. You are much too young, no doubt, but when I was a boy, there was a comic book with a figure called Rupert. And Rupert had glass vessels filled with light, and somehow or other, I don't know whether they appeared in every installment of this Rupert stories, or maybe it was only in one, but it was a very memorable thing, these glass vessels filled with lights. So they can be understood as a kind of image of what the Sfirot are. And the flow is the flow of light from one Sfira to another. Okay, does that answer?
Yes. Thanks. And does that mean that then there is an order to the process of going from like thought to action?
If I may just have a follow-up question to that with what he was asking about, what is the flows? And you're saying that there are four types of flows because there are four states of the Sfirot. You're giving them the English names and the Hebrew names. Was that something else I'm confusing it with?
No, that's something else. That's the Sfirot in the different worlds. So there's a world of emanation, and then below that is the world. I mean, that's, you know, how it's conceived in very simple terms. The world of
emanation. Is there a flow between these four worlds?
Yes, well, that's what it said here in this discourse, that from the sphere of Malchut, from kingship, it flows down from her into the lower three worlds. So that could be understood as from, you know, to world number one, world number two, world number three.
So the way I'm visualizing it is to, like, every person has these spherots in them. So we're talking about Sarah's spherots, and that there is a reflection of her spherots in every single one of these worlds, and then they're interconnected.
Well, you know, that's basically what it is saying.
Okay, sorry. Okay, continue. Sorry.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to try and share the screen again. Right. Now. So that's what it says. We're looking at line 27. That's what it says in the 1914 discourse. Over my medishnat ateret, but in the 1918 discourse, Mavayed explains b'inyan shnei chai sara, that what the phrase at the end, the main difference is the phrase at the end. What does the phrase at the end mean? The years of the life of Sarah. Shemudubah odat yesh mugash, that it's talking about haromamut vayit nasut, the exaltedness of the attribute kingship. And so this word yesh mugash, the being, as it were, feeling one's own being, that it's a sense of self, which nonetheless is a complete sense of nullification of self. So it's like contradictory. There's a sense of self, and yet nonetheless with total humility. Now these are part of the way in which Hasidic teaching describes kingship. You know, so here in England, we've recently got a new king. And so being a king, according to Hasidic teachings, is not the same as being appointed head of a company or something like that, or rector of a university. It's something completely on another order. And so on the one hand, there's haromamut vahitnasut, an exaltation, and at the same time, it's not a sense of self that the person feels. The king feels his exalted quality as king, but that can leave him, at least the Jewish image of this, he can still be total, an expression of total humility. So, adrava, in fact, on the contrary, not only doesn't he feel hubris, but he feels bechinat bitul be'etzem. He feels ultimate selflessness. Elezehu inyan ha-melucha. That's what kingship is. Hagbahave itnasut, elevation, exaltation, avalo mugash, but without feeling oneself to be so. Now it gives an image of a human king. Because of the nature of kingship, it's not because he's a very clever man. It's the fact that he is king. This sense of being king is something very exalted in him. I used to know a lady who was in a public school, an English public school, many years ago. And the Queen Mother would sometimes visit that school. And when she came, she would sometimes bring with her her two little girls named Elizabeth and Anne. Elizabeth would later grow up to be our late queen. Anyway, so the Queen Mother would come and there would be this whole school in assembly. I'm sure they had a very beautiful assembly hall in this English public school for girls. And the Queen Mother appeared on the stage, as it were, together with the headmaster, other people, or headmistress. And suddenly two little girls ran onto the stage in the middle. And one of them declares, "Royalty has arrived." And the Queen Mother got hold of these two little girls, turned them around and said, "Royalty shall depart." But it's extremely interesting that this little girl thought of herself in this way as royalty. She comes onto the stage, there's maybe 300 schoolgirls there watching and a whole lot of staff in dead silence. And it doesn't abash her at all. She just says, "Royalty has arrived." You know, so that is sort of, you know, a human queen in our time. Approximately. And this is the kind of concept that is being spoken about here, but taking it into ethereal terms. So despite, and according to this discourse, according to the way that it looks at this, these Jewish teachings about kingship, that, and one could claim that the European concept of kingship relates very closely to the biblical concept of kingship and the whole idea of king by divine right and the special divine quality of kingship, you know, could be understood as circling round biblical ideas about that as well. Now, ubedugmat tzadikim gedolim, like great righteous people, kmo Moshe Rabbeinu, like Moses himself, Moses our teacher. Now, Kashahaya Baha, when he was on Mount Sinai, he was there 40 days and 40 nights. How did he survive? Shahaya Nizon Miziv Hashchina. He was fed, he was sustained by the radiance of the divine presence. Bahainu, that means Shahaya Tzarich L'mazon, he needed food. Ele Shahamazon Haya, but the food consisted of Miziv Hashchina, the radiance of the divine presence. Now, that's radiance of the divine presence. It's tangible in his body because it's keeping his body alive. It's not something that you feel. Yes, when we eat an ordinary meal, we feel it. Oh, that was very nice. Yes, or maybe it could have had a bit more of this dressing or that. It could have been more salad, but we feel it. We're conscious of it. So for Moses being sustained by the radiance of the Shekhinah, he didn't feel it in that way. That would be out of the question. But nonetheless, the flow that came from the Shekhinah to him kept his physical body alive. Va'al derech gufim de la'atid, like the body in the future, when there's the revival of the dead, Sheyil gufim gashmiim, there'll be physical bodies. Ele sheyiyu betachlit hazikuch, but they will be totally purified. Veyiyu nizonim miziv hashchina, and they too will be sustained from the radiance of the divine presence. V'lechora. Okay, so that's what the second discourse says. The discourse of 1918. So the discourse of 1918 says that the last few words of the verse, Shnei Chaye Sarah, the years of the life of Sarah, it doesn't mean, as in the first discourse of 1914, that from kingship of Atzilut, it flows down into the worlds of creation, formation, and action. And that's what the last few words of the verse mean. It says it means something completely different. It means the exaltation of kingship, that kingship reaches above to an exalted level. Now, looking at these two discourses, at first sight, these two explanations contradict each other. According to the first explanation, the word Shnei Chaye Sarah, the years of the life of Sarah, mean descending down into the three lower worlds. And according to the second explanation, the second discourse, those words mean going higher than the world of Atzilut. Because at the level of the world of Atzilut, you cannot join opposites. What does it mean, joining opposites? That there should be a sense of a divine delight and nonetheless totally selfless. The idea of this absolute exaltation and the idea of total selflessness. Now, how can those two dwell together? In order to have those two apparently opposite feelings, at the same time, you have to rise to a level which is higher than the world of emanation. Bahainu, that means, right, so it explains this point. You have to go higher than the world of Atzilut. Now, the Rebbe then says in section Gimel. Okay, but before we come to this, let's just see if we're all okay. We're all on board, haven't fallen asleep. Hi, Jeffrey.
Trevor, apologies.
Are you okay with this, Eve?
I'm not sure if I see a contradiction, but obviously he's going to figure out why it's not a contradiction.
On the simple level, the contradiction is that in terms of explaining the verse, According to the first explanation of 1914, the last few words of the verse mean, having gone through into the world of Atzilut, it goes lower and lower and lower. And that's what the last three words of the verse mean, Shnei Chaye Sarah, the years of the life of Sarah. Whereas according to the second explanation, having described the process through to kingship of Atzilut, then you have the last three words of the verse means the exaltation of Malchut, the exaltation of kingship, reaching above the world of Atzilut and expressing this two opposites of the highest level of exaltation with total selflessness. So it's...
Fine, but one is a condition to the other.
Well, the discourse is going to say that one is conditioned by the
other. Okay, all right. Fine.
And I did say that. I did say that at the beginning, so maybe, you know, that gives the story away, you know. So.
Yeah, maybe that's what happened. Okay, fine. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Where would this be in your head, by the way?
Where would this
be? I mean, any of this. I mean, it's fine with... It's fine once it's on a on a chart, on a page. You know, you can see Atzilut, you can see the four worlds. And but if it's supposed to be inside you, where exactly would all these bits be? Where would you find Atzilut?
It's the inner reality. It's the spiritual reality of existence. We just see what our eyes and our senses permit us to see. But the actual inner spiritual reality is this whole structure of spherot, of divine emanations and of different worlds. I mean, it's not necessarily higher in terms of vertically upwards. It's inner, it's deeper and deeper until you come to the point beyond existence, Ein Sof, just the infinite, so which is beyond existence. Now, when it's drawn on a page, made into a diagram on a page, so the metaphor is higher, but that's just for convenience. It means that more inward point where there is only the divine.
Okay. So you just go deeper and deeper into something which is no longer yourself.
Yes. And yet.
And you wouldn't say, well, now I'm in, you know, now I'm in the sort of Yetzirah, now I'm in, Atzilut. I mean, you wouldn't really know that.
One aspect of pre-Hasidic Kabbalism might have expressed itself in that kind of way. And there were things like a sense of the soul ascending into higher worlds, although these ascents are never described in terms of going from the world of creation to the world of Atzilut or something like that. They're expressed in different ways. But the Hasidic teaching is that our role is not to climb into higher worlds. It is to be a kind of a mediator where we draw the higher dimension down into this world. And so we're not trying to climb to a higher place and be like an angel. We're trying to be who we are, you know, living with our feet on the ground, in the world as a human being, maybe a male or a female, and with everything else that goes into that sense of being, but to express in our lives and in our actions and our speech and our thought this sort of divine inner resonance.
Yeah. So you're not drawing down, you're really pushing out. if you're going deep into yourself and not up, See, this is why I always had this problem trying to figure out whether I'm supposed to go up or I'm supposed to go in. And you can't do both at once, actually.
Well, it's true that the way in which we envision things, you know, we have a certain pattern of how we envision things. I think if you imagine it from above downwards, that's probably an easier way to think about it. You know, so if, for example, when you are praying, you think of a flow which is coming from above down into you and through you into the world.
Okay, that's easy, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
They've got the names.
Well, you see what I mean? I mean, half the time they're telling you, draw things down, and half the time they're telling you, go in deep. Well, if you're going in deep, you can't draw down. The two don't go together.
Yeah, you have to.
Just image-wise.
Yeah, you have to pick your metaphor.
Yeah. I mean, one of the tools I use with what I feel you're trying to express is essentially you're focusing your consciousness. You're focusing your consciousness inwards in order to feel and be able to see the outwards, if that makes sense, in order to draw downwards back into yourself and then outwards.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense at all. And yeah. The idea is just because you feel your consciousness within you, it doesn't mean that your consciousness can't be universal. It's like saying that just because your body's in one place doesn't mean your consciousness can't be in another. But you're drawing it inwards in order to take your consciousness elsewhere.
Okay. All right.
That's great. Thank you.
Right. Okay, Alfred. Now, let's try to look at the way the Rebbe explains how these two interpretations from 1914 and 1918 can be put together. And in order to do that, the Rebbe is quoting a third discourse by another Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek. So the Rebbe Rashab, whose two discourses we were quoting before, he was the fifth Rebbe. We're now going to the third Rebbe. See, there are these seven Rebbes of Chabad. Our Rebbe was the seventh. So here we come to the third Rebbe. Now, he wrote a kind of commentary on the Book of Psalms, which is printed. And on Psalm 105, he explains the following thing. On the verse, Zachar le'olam brito, God remembers forever his covenant. Davad tziva le'elef dor, the thing that he has commanded for 1,000 generations. And there, Shemevi divrei midrash, he quotes the midrash. Elef dor alu b'machshava libarot. 1,000 generations arose in God's mind, so to speak, in God's thought, to be created. And how many were rubbed out? Taf taf kuf ayin dalet, 974 generations. My timer, what's the reason? Davad shiva le'elef dor. He commands a thing for 1,000 generations. Zeh Torah, that's the Torah. And how do we know that that is the covenant? Because one second, let's miss out these brackets. V'hainu, that means, Shehatorah nitna l'Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah was given to Moses, Shehayado ha'eschim v'sheish me'adam ha'rishon, who was the 26th generation from Adam. So that 26 generations, who were, when the Torah was given to Moses, when you add together the Yachadim, when you add together with the 974 generations that were rubbed out, that adds up to 1,000. So the 974 plus 26 is 1,000. So you've got 974 which were rubbed out. And then come 26 generations which were not rubbed out, and those are the 26 generations of the world before the Torah was given. And finally, the Torah was given. Then the Rebbe quotes another sort of parallel discussion of this, which is another opinion that the 980 generations that were wiped out. Why? Davar tzivah le'elef dor. He commanded something for 1,000 generations. The something that he commanded is not the Torah, but zemilah, it's circumcision. The special power of Brit Milah, of circumcision. Shenitna le'Avraham, which was given to Abraham, shahaya dor ha'eschim la'adam arishon, who was the 20th generation from Adam. So that means one way of understanding it is that you have a whole lot of generations crossed out until you come to Moses. And the other opinion is you have a whole lot of generations crossed out until you come to Adam. That's why, and so one is 974 and the other is 908. Now, so the Tzemach Tzedek explains. Now, so sorry. These line 14. Now, this is an important phrase in this discourse. Now, these two opinions, whether the 1,000 generations it's talking about Moses or Abraham, relates to two opinions about a different verse. It also uses the word 1,000. So that's like a connection for us here. Adam echad me'elef matzati. I have found one man in 1,000. Right? Now this is in Kohelet by King Solomon. I found one man in 1,000. So if we say this is talking about Abraham, according to the first one opinion, and the other opinion is we're talking about Moses. And the Tzemach Tzedek explains that this 1,000 means the world of emanation. What does that mean, the world of emanation? So the Rebbe quotes this in brackets, but it's a very interesting idea. The sages quote on this same verse, I've only found one man in 1,000. So the sages say like this in the Talmud, it's a passage in the Talmud. 1,000 people, 1,000 men come and start studying scripture. One of them, I think it goes that 100 of them advance to Mishnah. And 110 of them, that means a tenth each time, 10 of them advance to Talmud. And then one of them is able to say what the law actually is. So you start off with 1,000 students, and only one of them is able to reach the true ideal of scholarship. And it explains that Mikra, the scripture, is in the world of action. Then Mishnah is in the world of formation. Talmud is in the world of creation. And deciding the law is in the world of Atzilut, in the world of emanation. So we have those four worlds again. And this relates to these two explanations, that both Abraham and Moses were souls of Atzilut. And so then, So he's discussed this idea of, I found one man in 1,000. So the one man is either Moses or it's Abraham, and there are various side explanations of this verse. And now we come to the end of that verse. Now this, and this is really the crux of the discourse. So it says that I found one man in 1,000, the isha b'chol eile lo matzati, but I didn't find a woman. So one way of understanding this is King Solomon is depressed. I mean, that's one way of reading Kohelet. So the sages give a reason for that. A whole long story about the king of the demons. So I found one man in 1,000, but not a single woman, which seems like a kind of misogynist statement. but this discourse interprets it in a completely opposite way. Now, the woman whom I couldn't find, because she's too exalted, this woman is Sarah. Lo matzati, why didn't I find her? Ki hi lemala mi'atzilut, because she's higher than the world of emanation. Elef, the world of emanation is represented by the concept 1,000, but she's higher than that. You can find the man in the 1,000, but you can't find the woman. The afalp, and even though she'inyana shel Sarah, the whole nature of Sarah, hu lahamshich et inyanei Avraham ba'olamot, her quality is to get Avraham's supernal aspects flowing downwards into the worlds of creation, formation, and action. As it's known that Abram himself is like the hidden world, not only because his name is Avram. Now, Avram, before he had the extra hay in his name, his name reads Exalted Father. And that means the intellect, which is hidden beyond any idea. Even when he's called Avraham, the father of many nations, he was still separate from the world. Whereas Sarah, his wife, she is the quality of the revealed world. So Abraham is like the hidden world, which in the terms of the divine name, for example, is the letters Yud and He, which is the upper realm, and Sarah is the Vavanhe, which is bringing things into this tangible world here. Now, even though Sarah's force is to bring that which is exalted into that which is the everyday, she is actually higher than the world of Atzilut, higher than the world of emanation, and higher than the level of Abraham. Because you need that, as Eve pointed out before, the power to bring the quality of Atzilut into the worlds, into the lower worlds, creation, formation, and action, right into this world, comes from a level which is higher than Atzilut. And according to this, we can understand these two comments about the years of the life of Sarah. Because the very idea that there can be a descent into the worlds of creation, formation, and action, which is the first explanation of the 1914 discourse, comes because of reaching above the world of emanation, which is from the 1918, the second discourse.
Rabbi, if I may ask, you need to be a tzaddik to do that, to reach up that high?
On one level, certainly, yes, you have to be a tzaddik to reach up that high. But on another level, each one of us has a role. Mm. Let's just say in terms of communicating Jewish teaching. Each one of us has a role that we can communicate teaching, Jewish teaching, spiritual teaching, this Hasidic dimension. We can communicate that into the world around us, which is like reaching down. But in order for us to do that, we have to be able to reach up as well. We have to be able to reach up and connect with the spiritual dimension beyond.
Right.
Right. So in that we are ourselves able to do both those steps.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other points? Okay. So let's see this later part of the discourse. So we've actually got here, you know, so far we've got this sort of basic structure of the discourse, that in order to all things downwards, we have to be connected upwards. And that's a very important part of our being, being connected upwards and then being able to pour downwards. Now, here we have a further dimension of this. Now, this explanation is based on a discourse of the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, which he wrote that when it's talking about the years of the life of Sarah, and he comments on this, that they seem to be opposite ways of understanding, and he gives a similar way of putting the two together as we've done here. Because when it says the years of the life of Sarah, that's actually something higher than the 100 and the 20 and the 70. Because 100 years means the 10, this is what the second Lubavitcher Rebbe said. The 100 years mean the hidden spherot, which are more exalted than the 10 revealed spherot. And that's what the Zohar means when it says all of them are above. And when it says at the end of the verse, the years of the life of Sarah, that's even higher than the hidden sphera. And that's why it says just the years of the life of Sarah without giving a number, because that's something which is above being numbered. As quoting from the book of creation, it says, before one, what can you count? Before the number one, what can you count? And these, and he goes on to explain that these different ideas of the 100 years and the years of the life of Sarah, they're at different times. The 100 years, the special quality of the 100 years that Sarah has, that's now. Because through the sifting that the quality of kingship achieves in the world, and the quality of kingship is like Sarah, and achieves this transformation of the world, there's an arousal which goes up so high to the 10 hidden spherot. But when we just say the years of the life of Sarah without the 100, we're talking about after the completion of the sifting, that what it will be like in the future. And according to that, we find that Sarah is higher than Abraham. As it says in the Sedra, God says to Abraham, Kol asher toma alecha Sarah, shma b'kola, whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her voice, obey her voice. And the sages tell us, this is an image that the Talmud reveals of someone who went into the grave of Machpelah in Hebron until he found Abraham and Sarah. Right, they're supposed to be there in that cave, dead. The only thing is, this person who went down, 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 he didn't see them as if they were dead. There's Abraham, who is like resting on the lap, his head is resting on the lap of Sarah, and she is looking at his hair, at his head. She's gazing, so there's that, this image of Abraham and Sarah. You know, how someone can go down, down, down in the cave of Machpelah. Yeah, we're talking about Hebron in the mosque, but going down, down, down there, and then seeing this, striking image of Abraham and Sarah together. And so that must be Sarah, after the sifting process has been completed, right? The sifting is the sifting of negative from positive, or positive from negative. And that's really the whole life that we have in exile, is for the sake of this sifting. And in the life of an individual, it means the struggle that we might have, you know, more or less on a constant level, that there's always something negative to avoid, whether in our thoughts or in our speech or sometimes in our actions. there are always these negative possibilities, and one has to keep avoiding that negative thing. And that's what we're doing, sifting. We're avoiding that negative thing. And after that, he says, no, this is the second of Avachadeva. He sometimes gives alternative explanations. He says it's talking about the sifting of sparks in the time of exile. And he adds that it's not just that Sarah is greater than Abraham in the world to come, because in Pnimiyut, in an inner way, also in the time of exile, the attribute Malchut is higher, because in the future, the attribute of Malchut will be revealed. And he quotes this on a verse which the sages comment on. It's a verse from the Song of Songs, and the lover says to her beloved, be like a gazelle, go and be like a gazelle. The gazelle, at the time when it's sleeping, it doesn't have both eyes shut, we learn. It's got one eye open. Even at the time of exile, which is called sleeping, in an inward way, there are all the special exalted things that there will be in the future. So that's what it says in the writing of the second of Avachadeva, also commenting on this verse. And so now we can look back again at these two comments in the discourse, the two discourses of the fifth Rebbe. Not only the descent of the sphere, the attribute Malchut, into the lower worlds, which is in order to sift out the sparks. And that's where it is in those lower worlds. That's where the sparks are. Because in the world of Atzilut, in the higher world, lo yugul chara, bad cannot dwell with you. And so the upper world is pure. It cannot have this negativity which needs sifting. And but the way that we are able to do that is from the empowerment that comes from that level which is higher than Atzilut. And not only that, through the sifting, we ourselves achieve, we ourselves step higher than Atzilut. And in fact, the special quality that we achieve through the sifting, even though it will be finally revealed only in the world to come, we get some kind of glimmer of it now as well. So so then we go back to consider this last phrase again. That that when we say the years of the life of Sarah, it includes all the life and doesn't divide them into different groups, the way the original way of understanding it is, because this is something which can't be divided. Because when we're talking about the special quality of Atzilut, and even to the higher level of the 10 hidden sphera, there, the fact that we can't divide things is because this is something which is beyond being depicted. Whereas when we're talking about the lower worlds, the reason why we can't divide them is because in there is not a revelation of light in any one of them. And that means it's only when, in terms of revealed light, that there's some kind of division, a very exalted radiance, or radiance which is on the lower level. That's one second. When we're talking about revealed radiance, then we've got the idea of division. One radiance is higher, another radiance is lower. Whereas when we're talking about going down into the lower worlds, and there's only the quality of actually achieving something, then because of that descent, And the fact that even while descending, we're connected to the very essence, which is beyond the vision. Then when we're going down in order to achieve what has to be achieved, we're not bothered about the vision. The vision doesn't make any difference to us. And similarly in the service of a person. When we're working in terms of our intellect and our emotion, there are all kinds of divisions. Whereas when we act with the acceptance of the yoke, then there's no division whatsoever. So in other words, what this is saying is that there are different approaches in the whole question of relationship to the divine. And there's one approach where there are divisions and it's very subtle, and one level of radiance is higher, and then there's another level of radiance which isn't so high. Whereas when the person is acting with the acceptance of the yoke, this is what the Torah says, and the person carries it out, that is something which reaches to a very exalted level. So that's basically this discourse, and we have the final part. That when we're talking about the 100 years, there's division, because the 100 years, the 20 years and the 7 years, that's three different types. But when we talk about the integration of all the divine emanations, they are integrated, but it's not yet a total unity. But when we come to the phrase at the end, the years of the life of Sarah, that means at the very beginning there is no division whatsoever. And then we come to Rashi's comment, which we didn't do at the beginning, but Rashi says when she was 100, she was like 20. And when she was 20, she was like 7. And when it comes to the years of the life of Sarah, he explains they are all equal as regards goodness. And the thing is that the 100 years are not equal, because the 20 years and the units of the years, the 7 years, they are three different dimensions. But when we go to the integration where everything is unified together, then we have 100 is like 20 and 20 is like 7. Then it's like it. But then when we reach the end of the verse, Shnei Chai Sarah, then we reach the level which is beyond any kind of division. So there it is, talking about this quest to reach beyond any kind of division, which is achieved through acceptance of the yoke and the ability to do something. It might be a mitzvah of the Torah, which a person is reluctant to do, or it feels doesn't feel how he can do it or she can do it. But then they take on that they're going to do it. And in that decision, they cut through all kinds of barriers in a most amazing way. Okay, I hope that was a little bit understandable.
Good cheer. Thank you.
Okay.
Shkoya.
All the best.
Shkoya, very good lesson. Thank you.
Thank you. It was fascinating.
Thanks, Tally.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. Charlie, that was beautiful. Thank you.
Okay, lovely seeing you, and I hope we're going to be able to meet next week as well.
Please God.
Okay, all the best.
Thank you.
Good job, us. Good night. God bless.
God bless. All the best. All the best, Sarah.
Thank you. Laura,
was that interesting?
Yes, thank you.
Right. Okay.
I won't pretend I could follow everything, but it was definitely interesting.
Love.
Thank you. I'll come next week if that's okay.
That's lovely.
Yes. Thank you.
So I think I'd put you on the list. Yeah. But if not, just get it from Paige.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. God bless.
Right. All the best. God bless. All the best, Delphia. Take care.